How's it going, Starsky?
Fucking Joe Lieberman won.
You're kidding me. He won what?
He won the whatever.
Forgive my ignorance. Wasn't he running as an independent?
Yes, he was. And he lost the Democratic primary.
But then he won as an independent?
He won as a Connecticut for Lieberman party Lieberman candidate Lieberman for Lieberman.
I'd like to challenge anybody to call in to Kill Radio right now, 213-252-0998, and explain to me what the fascination with Joe Lieberman is. As a Democrat, as a Muppet, as anything, I just do not understand why people think the man is appealing even a little bit.
I think he's just like, what's that one, the cartoon dog, Droopy, whatever?
he's just, he's just Joe Lieberman.
Right, but, I mean, why is it that Democrats can really, get out there and vote and show support for a pro-war candidate?
Well, it wasn't that. He got, I don't know what it was. I just heard it 80% or 60% of the Republican vote.
Oh,
so
I see.
It isn't
so
about,
it wasn't that the Democrats came out for him. It was that the Republicans.
I think it was 30% Democrat.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, then that explains it. So now we have the Republicans electing Democrats for us as well. That's very exciting. Zell Miller and Joe Lieberman. That's the ticket that I'm hoping I see.
In 08?
On the Democratic ticket 2008. That'd be awesome.
Give him Zell.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Well, any other exciting or disheartening news coming from the pipeline?
Catherine Harris in Florida lost. Oh, what a shocker.
Oh, wow. Does that mean she's finally going to prison for all the crimes that she committed in 2000?
Cruella de Vil.
Oh, wow. So you think people don't like her because she's evil, or people don't like her because she's hateful and evil?
I think having hatefulness and evil together,
it's a double whammy.
Yeah.
Awesome. Tell you what, I'm going to play this thing that was aired on Marketplace, on your arch nemesis, actually, on NPR. Oh. But a friend of mine actually wrote it, and
cool.
It's pretty funny, and it's about the way we campaign, the way we advertise campaigns. So okay. I'm going to play this while we get some tech set up, and we're going to do a special edition of the people who do that. Is that cool?
It's going to be the Kill Radio News, People Do That Comedy Hour. It's going to be the election coverage of Kill Radio.
You dig?
If you live in a congressional district that's a toss-up, or if you're in a state with controversial propositions on the ballot, you're probably happier than most that tomorrow's election day. The campaign phone calls will stop, the TV and radio ads, too. Even without being bombarded with ads for and against a certain ballot measure, political ads can be confusing and maybe just a little bit excessive in their description of what any given initiative will do. But if you think the real ones are extreme, wait till you hear the Marketplace players' take on them.
I'm a mom, and I'm voting yes on Prop 111. Prop 111 provides free candy for every child in our state.
I heart candy.
And the candy won't hurt their teeth, because Prop 111 will fund the development of a high-tech polymer that protects kids' teeth from decay. The polymer also makes kids 200% smarter and wealthier, and it makes them hate illegal drugs. And Prop 111 does all this without raising taxes by floating a series of magic astrological wizard bonds that incur zero debt while generating billions of dollars in revenue. If you believe in unicorns, vote yes on Prop 111.
Paid for by Citizens for Realism in Voting.
Supporters of Prop 111 say it gives candy to children. But thanks to special interest loopholes, Prop 111 will actually seal children in wooden barrels and roll them off the tops of skyscrapers.
Help me!
The plummeting child-stuffed barrels will destroy our roads. 10% of state revenue will go towards repaving the streets and burying the dead. And Prop 111 has provisions for 900 new taxes, including one on the air you breathe. Prop 111 was crafted in a cave full of vampire bats by demons with wings of fire. It hates you. If you are a human being, vote no on 111.
Paid for by Voters United Against Fearmongering.
Our ads brought to you by Rico Galliano and the Marketplace Players.
There you go, a little taste of how the system works, what I like to call the process.
Yeah, let's talk about some other processes here.
Let's talk about processes, man.
I want to talk about the Republican process, because what we've been seeing this election and the past 6 years is they don't have shit to run on. They don't have, I mean, they don't have anything of substance, so all they can do is either call names, spread fear, and or lie and steal the elections. Disenfranchise voters. You hear about the robocalls where they send out calls kind of making it seem like it's the Democratic candidates' supporters.
Oh, yeah, I heard that actually over and over today.
I'm sick and tired of hearing from that Democratic candidate. I'm voting Republican.
So it's Republicans that do it.
Yeah, well, here's how they do it. They have a very long message that people don't sit through, so they hang up. If you listen to the whole thing, it gets to the end and says, paid for by Republicans who are opposing, you know, like it tells you who it is. By law, they have to, but it's so far down the line, people don't sit through it. And plus, it's one, two, three, four, you know, in a row. Hi, this is an important message about Democratic candidate somebody. I sound bright and cheerful at the beginning, and I sound like a supporter. But as it goes on longer and longer, it gets more negative, and then you finally realize it's Republican. But if you don't, and you know, like people, like one person was like dealing with like a hospice care thing
but
where she needed
at least have the courtesy of like making these calls take place around dinner time.
Yes.
Lovely.
But one person that reported this happening was trying to keep her line open for hospice care for her mother or something like that, and she was in tears. She's like, I can't keep my line open. I'm getting repeatedly called.
That's horrible.
Yeah, and it, some of these assholes are called on it and caught, and they say, well, no, we're not going to stop. The National Republican Committee or whatever it is that was behind it says, no, we're not going to stop doing it. It's
just
legal.
Because, I mean, I think, you know, their attitude is in general sort of like, well, if it's not illegal, then there's no reason we should stop. And if it is illegal,
wait until we get caught and have to be forced to stop.
Then you just try and stop us.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing,
it's a healthy attitude.
And the whole clever thing with Republicans is the way they attack is they'll accuse their opponents of the very things that they're doing. It's, you know, it's this clever little thing where, all right, I'm raping and pillaging and stealing and burning down villages. I just got done doing that for, you know, about 3 weeks straight. Now I'm going to accuse my opponent of doing that very thing I just did. They'll be so thrown off balance, they won't know what to do.
Well, what's worse is they, you know, they attack by accusing the other side of attacking them. So in many cases, there's not even an actual event that takes place first. It's more like a spontaneous cosmic event where you suddenly find out that the Republicans have been offended. And you can't quite figure out why, but they have such a solid argument on why whatever it is that happened is unspeakable. Well, like this whole bullshit I was talking a little bit before you got here about the whole... I'm already using the sound bites when the botched joke.
Yeah, that's the soundbite.
I've never referred to anything else as botched before, except maybe an election, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, so... They've been using this botched joke thing about, you know, Kerry thinks soldiers are stupid and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And the amazing part of it is if you actually listen to Kerry's speech, like, okay, it was cool. Kerry said, I'm not going to apologize because I didn't do anything wrong.
Except that he did.
But then he goes on and says that it was a botched joke.
Yeah.
I don't even accept that.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a joke. I think what he said, if you take all the other commentary away from it and you just go based on what he said, like you're sitting there watching John Kerry talk, what I got from it, before I heard all of the other commentary, was if collectively as a nation you go through life being uneducated and misinformed, you collectively as a nation end up in Iraq.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah.
It's not criticism. It has nothing to do with the soldiers. I didn't even get that it was a reference to being a soldier until the Republicans started talking about it.
I think there's three ways to look at it, and I think all three of them are correct. Your way is a good way of looking at it, and I think it's correct. Mumia Abu Jamal had a commentary the other day I heard, and he made a really good point. He said, well, guess what? Kerry's actually right if he is talking about the soldiers. Because guess who gets preyed upon by the recruiters? Those who aren't educated, those who don't have much of a future, don't have much of a chance. If you don't study and get your shit together, guess what? your only option probably is going to be to join the military, and you're going to end up stuck in Iraq. So that's number two interpretation, which is true. And number three, which I don't even buy now, because like, if you wanted to insult Bush, I think you probably would have mentioned Bush. I mean, he didn't even kind of sort of mention Bush, you know? It applies to him, it's correct, but what? You know, it didn't get there. But the number three way of looking at it is to say, hey, if you don't want to end up like Bush, stop being ignorant, pay attention, and learn about the world around you and get an education. So all three interpretations, I think, are possible. All three are correct, and none of them require apology. It's just that he's not a great communicator. At least he's not now. What Mumia said was, well, you know, he used to really be great when he spoke in front of Congress after the Vietnam War. He really could be.
Yeah. No, when he wasn't running for president, Kerry had great things to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, maybe that says something about what it takes to run for president, you know, and about the way that the system works. You know, we're always bitching and moaning and complaining about how there's never any legitimate third-party candidates that can actually take power. And yet we don't want them to do any of the things that the Democrats do to obtain power. You know, because I think it's pretty obvious that they have to do all kinds of underhanded, seedy, deceitful things. Maybe not as bad as the Republicans, maybe not as blatantly as the Republicans, but it seems like the way the system is set up, if you don't play the Republican game, then they win. I mean, one might argue, intellectually speaking, that you can only win by not playing, but in this particular situation, you know, how is a third-party candidate really supposed to assume power without lying, cheating, and stealing?
At this point, yeah, I don't know. The other clever thing, the other little switcheroo that's being predicted that will come from the Republicans, fits right in, is if, in fact, the Democrats do make it through and regain power and shift the balance, expect to hear the Republicans say, there was irregularities at the polls. The Democrats stole the election.
Oh.
Yeah, genius.
Irregularities. Have there been any news stories coming in yet about the irregularities of today?
Yeah, I think we could probably, we could check in
realize that there will never be an election for the rest of our lives that isn't marred by ridiculous irregularities.
Yeah, and do you remember any of this in prior to the Bush W years? I don't remember. I mean, every single election, well, it's just too close to call. Oh, yeah, it's too close to... I'm sick of it. And you know, that happens sometimes, but every single election in multiple races, it's just too close to call. We got to keep it right there at the stealing margin.
Right. Well, I mean, before Bush took power, it was like I was taking a nap, you know, and dreaming of pretty things, and, you know, then Bush took power, and now the dream is over. Now the reality of the situation is blatantly obvious, and nobody wants to do anything about it. I don't know. I don't know what to say. And again, it comes back to that whole thing of, like, third party can't take power without lying, cheating, and stealing, and yet the thing we like about them is they get in front of the microphone and say, hey, I don't lie, I don't cheat, and I don't steal. And I hear that, and I go, oh, well, I guess you're not going to get elected.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. It's screwed.
What about, do you have any sort of secret gay underage relationships? I mean, that would be interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd vote for that.
Put that out front.
I'd put that in my pipe
and
smoke it.
Let's get it right away, yeah.
Was that gay? I don't know. How was your voting experience today? I noticed you're not wearing your sticker.
It's this lint covered. It keeps falling off, so I kind of put it. I put it in my pocket.
I thought maybe you were ashamed to be an American.
No, I don't hate America or my freedoms.
good, because we're watching you.
Okay. Well, when I went to my polling place, I walk in the door and looking around, don't know which way to go, and they say, "Oh, go over there." Okay, I go over there and the table. Oh, we don't have your name. We don't know. Maybe you don't vote here. You know, they change sometimes. What's your address? Oh, okay. 5362. No, 53. 53. Okay, it's 53. Okay, is it 53? Okay, 5362. Okay, well, yeah, maybe. Oh, go over to the table that's near the door that they can look up and tell you which table to go to. Well, why the hell did you tell me to go to the thing and the whatever? Anyway, minor detail. It all worked out, but
was it
stupid?
Was it under Starsky? Was that the problem?
Yeah. That was the problem. But I had both IDs, you know.
Well, what was your polling place like, though? Like,
it was pretty. It was tight. It was pretty tight. It was well put together. They just didn't. I mean, obviously, you have a table to tell you. If you have a table that tells you which table to go to, that's the first table. Not, oh, arbitrarily go to the wrong table first. Right. But they were pretty well organized otherwise. People had a good amount of volunteers. Everything was nice. The machine that's supposedly going to scan the cards was broken, which seemed kind of like fucked, but oh well.
The counting machine?
Yeah, I just don't get that.
You know, like, that's just a little detail.
How often do elections happen? Not very often. Let's get ready a few weeks in advance, okay?
If you've learned anything from the past several elections, it's not the counting that counts. Yeah. It's the act of voting. Mm. As long as you go in there and
feel like
and
you
leave
did
with a sticker.
Yes.
That's what really matters. Well, my polling place was like the opposite experience. Which is to say that it was like a mess. It was in a cafeteria room of like a, I don't know, like a senior center or something in my neighborhood, and it was like, it was completely run by really, really old people who don't speak English.
All like what?
All. There was one kid who was, I guess, like somebody's grandson, and he was the one who was sort of like helping to direct people, like, oh, go over here, do this. Everybody, the lady had the hardest time. Finding my name.
Yeah.
My name was there, no problem.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
And then after I voted, I go and I give my card, and the lady says something to me in Spanish, which I didn't understand.
No, you didn't catch any of it. You could repeat now.
Honestly, I don't remember what it was because it was just like gibberish to me, and then all the other old ladies around her started laughing like at me, like my fly was down or something.
Maybe they recognize you.
Well, I don't think so. I think they were laughing because they knew my vote wasn't going to count. I heard the distinct sound of when they put my ballot in the box.
Oh, the shredder?
Yeah.
There's a shredder slot and there's a counting slot.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how was the crowdedness? I had
it was
no
not
waiting.
Crowded
yeah,
at all. There was one guy there who, oddly enough, but in front of me in what would loosely be described as a line. But I wasn't going to engage in any kind of confrontation. I had to pee, so I was a little disappointed that I had to wait extra double long for that, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But I voted, and I pretty much voted without putting too much thought into it. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I voted based on what I thought I should vote for without putting in the kind of work that maybe a more seasoned professional might put into it.
I didn't do a lot of work. I read some of the things, but I have to say,
there were a couple of things I didn't even understand. A couple of the propositions where it was like, okay, so they want to tax something. Like the cigarette one, I didn't fully understand. I voted against it because a lot of people that I respect, I guess, didn't support it or whatever. But generally speaking, I consider myself for raising taxes on poison. But then there was some suggestion that the revenue raised for this would just not actually go to anything worthwhile.
Well, let me tell you
but
what
they always say that about propositions that you don't want in the past. Oh, yeah, sure, well, this will raise a lot of money, but it won't get spent right.
Here's what the Los Angeles Greens say about it. And I got this voter guide from Honky D, who will be joining us later.
Lovely.
So, and I have to say I used it pretty heavily. Anyway, you're talking about Proposition 86, tax on cigarettes. As the voter guide indicates, this proposition imposes additional 13-cent tax on each cigarette distributed. That's $2.60 per pack. And indirectly increases tax on other tobacco products. The revenue generated from this increased excise tax, estimated to be about $2.1 billion annually, will be spent on emergency health care, enforcement of tobacco-related laws, anti-smoking education, cancer prevention, and cancer treatment. There was some debate in the committee about supporting this proposition. This is the Greens committee.
Did the Greens support it?
Yes. While many agreed that increasing the tax on tobacco would be a good example of true cost pricing, i.e. would put the cost of the product more in line with the overall price paid by society for it, others contended that this was a sin tax that sought naively to cure social ills and that it would punish the poor disproportionately. Ultimately, the committee recommends a yes vote on this proposition, as it will certainly discourage smoking and generate new revenue for treating the health problems tobacco products create. There's another thing, too, I heard on KPFK earlier, and that is that it has been proven statistically that as the price of cigarettes go up, more and more young people decide, I'm not going to smoke, it's too expensive. And so that's a good thing, because if you don't start early...
Well, I'm all in favor of the price of cigarettes going up, and I'm actually in favor of a sin tax. Not syntax, but sin tax.
Syntax errors?
Yeah, and it's just that my definition of sin differs wildly from everybody else's.
Oh.
But
curious then.
Yeah, but one of the things, the Democrats did not support this proposition, and one of the reasons that they didn't support it was that it allots only 10% of the money that it raises goes to anti-smoking campaigns. And the other 90% was sort of non-specific. And the argument was that this would basically generate a lot of money for a bureaucracy that has zero accountability for the way it could spend. So it could go and spend the money on crack. And, well, that would be good. I guess that would get it off the streets. That's a bad example. But my point being that it was just sort of like it had its heart in the right place, but it just wasn't a very good bill. So the Democrats didn't support it.
I can see that.
And apparently neither did I. As I am so easily led by the information that I'm presented with.
Well, I was sending you all that vote Republican literature, so I hoped I had some influence on you.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I understood that a friend of mine was telling me about someone that they work with voted pretty much Democrat across the board, a couple of Greens here or there, but voted for Schwarzenegger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the reason was that Phil Angelides is a pussy.
Oh, is he?
Now, I have not examined Phil Angelides the way I've examined pussy, but I think that this is probably a bad thing, because I'm wondering if there's a lot of other Democrats who have gone ahead and voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger because they figure, well, things are basically okay for me, so why change the governor? And we really only have the Democrats to blame for this. Because can you say, let's not even say nice things. Let's just say things. Can you say three things about Phil Angelides? I mean, what the hell kind of campaign has this been?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't even think of three things about Phil Angelides, let alone nice things.
He's a treasurer.
He's not Schwarzenegger. It's the only thing that I'm absolutely certain of.
He's a treasurer. He's not Schwarzenegger. And he wears glasses.
No, that's... I mean, actually, but who he is as governor.
Oh,
who he
geez.
Would be as governor.
Oh, you're going to press the point.
He's like... Well, he's not unlike Gray Davis, as far as I could tell. He's just sort of this, like, bland, non-specific...
Yeah.
You know...
Where's the star
vaguely
power?
Moderate, you know. It was nice to see Cruz Bustamante on the bill again. This time as insurance commissioner.
Oh, is that where he was? I didn't even catch that.
Yeah. After that unbelievably, ridiculously bad campaign that he ran against Schwarzenegger when Schwarzenegger took over in the illegal recall.
Yes. All right, I got to play you something.
Oh, though. Please do.
Vis-a-vis, if I can get this to load. Vis-a-vis.
What do you got?
Hold on, I got problems.
Oh, actually, I have something I can play if you want to work on those problems.
Okay.
Let me just grab it from Truth Out here. This was Keith Olbermann.
Oh, great.
Had an interesting thing here that I think I can just play by clicking. Let's see if that works. You're listening to Kill Radio.
And finally tonight, a special comment about tomorrow's elections. We are, as every generation, inseparable from our own time. Thus is our perspective inevitably that of the explorer looking into the wrong end of the telescope. But even accounting for our myopia, it is hard to imagine there have been many elections more important than this one, certainly not in non-presidential years. And so we look at the verdict in the trial of Saddam Hussein yesterday, and with the very phrase October or November surprise now a part of our vernacular, and the chest thumping coming from so many of the Republican campaigners today, each of us must wonder about the convenience of the timing of his conviction and sentencing. But let us give history and coincidence the benefit of the doubt. Let's say it just happened that way, and for a moment not look into the wrong end of the telescope. Let's perceive instead the bigger picture. Saddam Hussein found guilty in an Iraqi court. Who can argue against that? He is officially what the world always knew he was, a war criminal. And Mr. Bush, was this imprimatur worth the cost of 2,832 American lives and of perhaps thousands more American lives yet to be lost? Is the conviction of Saddam Hussein the reason you went to war in Iraq, or did you go to war in Iraq because of the weapons of mass destruction that did not exist? Or did you go to war in Iraq because of the connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda that did not exist? Or did you go to war in Iraq to break the bonds of tyranny there while installing the mechanisms of tyranny here? Or did you go to war in Iraq because you felt the need to wreak vengeance against somebody, anybody? Or did you go to war in Iraq to contain a rogue state, which months earlier your own administration had declared had been fully contained by the sanctions? Or did you go to war in Iraq to keep gas prices down? How startling it was, sir, to hear you introduce oil to your own stump speeches over the weekend. Not 4 years removed from the most dismissive, the most condescending, the most ridiculing denials of the very hint at, as Mr. Rumsfeld put it, this nonsense. There you were campaigning in Colorado, in Nebraska, in Florida, in Kansas, suddenly turning this unpatriotic idea into a platform plank. You can imagine a world, you said, in which these extremists and radicals got control of energy resources. And then you can imagine them saying, we're going to pull a bunch of oil off the market to run your price of oil up unless you do the following. Having frightened us, having bullied us, having lied to us, having ignored and rewritten the Constitution under our noses, having stayed the course, having denied you have stayed the course, having belittled us about timelines but instead extolled benchmarks, you've now resorted, sir, to this? We must stay in Iraq to save the $2 gallon of gas? Mr. President, there is no other conclusion we can draw as we go to the polls tomorrow. Sir, you have been making this up as you went along. This country was founded to prevent anybody from making it up as they went along. Those vaunted founding fathers of ours have been so quoted up that they appear as if marble statues, like the chiseled guards of China or the faces on Mount Rushmore. But in fact, they were practical people. And the thing they obviously feared most was a government of men and not laws. They provided the checks and balances for a reason. No one man could run the government the way he alone saw fit unless he, at the least, took into consideration what those he governed saw. The House of Representatives would be the people's eyes. A Senate would be the corrective force on that House. An executive would do the work and hold the Constitution to his chest like his child. And a Supreme Court would oversee it all. Checks and balances. Where did all that go, Mr. Bush? And what price did we pay because we have let it go? Saddam Hussein will get out of Iraq the same way 2,832 Americans have, and maybe thousands more. He'll get out faster than we will. And if nothing changes tomorrow, you, sir, will be out of the White House long before the rest of us can say we are out of Iraq. And whose fault is this? Not truly yours. You took advantage of those of us who were afraid and those of us who believed unity and nation took precedence over all else. But we let you take that advantage. And so we let you go to war in Iraq to oust Saddam or find non-existent weapons or avenge 9/11 or fight terrorists who only got there after we did or as cover to change the fabric of our Constitution or for lower prices at the Texaco or there are still a few hours left before the polls open, sir. There are many rationalizations still untried. And whatever your motives of the moment, we the people have in true good faith and with the genuine patriotism of self-sacrifice, of which you have shown you know nothing, we have let you go on, making it up as you went along, unchecked and unbalanced. Vote. And Keith Olbermann, good night and good luck. Joe Scarborough's next.
Good night and good luck. Can you just?
He's been doing that a lot lately. I think he fancies himself.
I think he does fancy himself.
Edward Murrow. And you know what? He needs to stop calling President Bush sir.
It's you're supposed to, you know, unbalanced as he is, you have to call him sir. It gives you more credibility, sir. You are a fucking asshole.
There you go. That's good.
Thank you. I do want to talk just briefly about the imminent hanging of Saddam Hussein. I have two problems with this. One is a philosophical problem, and the other one is a political. I'll start with the philosophical problem. This country has a general problem with the celebration of death. I believe that death, even in the case of self-defense or what do you call it, preemptive striking as a form of self-defense. You know, even in cases where, man, I really had to kill that guy. That is unfortunate. Human death is unfortunate. It's sad that people die. It's sad that there are people that we feel we have to kill. whether that's true or not. Let's argue that it's true, that there are people who have to be killed. It's still something you're supposed to look on as a sad thing. It says something about society, that this death has to take place. And this country has a serious problem with celebrating death. When we killed Saddam's sons, people were laughing about it, putting their pictures up, going, hooray, hooray, hooray. Yes, perhaps they deserve to die. I'm willing to accept that. But the death of a human being is not cause for celebration. You're either sad that that being died, or you're sad that you had to kill them. Either way, death is tragic. And as soon as death stops being tragic and starts being something that's fun and cool and exciting and worth celebration, that's when the whole thing goes out the window. And right now, we're having this big celebration over what is going to be the execution of Saddam Hussein. Yeah. And I got nothing nice to say about Saddam Hussein, but I think celebrating his death makes Americans look bad.
Yeah. Well, I think your point is good. It makes anybody look bad. It's like, what difference is there except in maybe, and even this is debatable, I guess, what difference is there except in quantity between you and him cackling over the people he murdered?
Well, exactly. You don't cackle over death. Yeah. That's the only point I'm trying to make on a purely, and maybe people don't agree with me on this, but on a purely personal philosophical level, it's just incredibly bad taste to celebrate death. Now, on a political level, this conviction is such a crock of shit. Convicted, even Keith Olbermann is buying the line of convicted by an Iraqi court.
Yeah, it's
there's
not
no Iraqi court. There can be no such thing as an Iraqi court while Iraq is under U.S. military occupation. That's the whole definition of military occupation. It's such a ridiculous joke to say. And the thing is, in the long term, this is really bad for us. Because what it means is that Saddam can never be legitimately convicted for his very real crimes. Yeah. Instead, he's been convicted by this court that we helped set up under an illegal, unjustified occupation and war.
Wouldn't you want it to be something that would stick and hold up for, you know, many years to come instead of being like, we're calling the shots. We're going to say how it is. And we're going to say when you release the verdict. And it's completely, it's like...
I don't support the death penalty. But I'm willing to accept that that's part of that is a cultural thing. And perhaps in that culture, the death penalty is just something, you know, it's always been around. They have it. So that's fine. But I just think that I wanted to see Saddam get a legitimate conviction for his crimes. And as soon as we went into Iraq to occupy that country, that was the moment at which it became impossible for him to ever truly be held accountable for his crimes. Now he gets to go down as a martyr because he's going to be executed by a phony court under phony circumstances in a phony war, which, you know, he may look on TV like he's not happy with it, but this is the best he could have hoped for. And on top of all that, it even works for his enemies, which are also our enemies, which is Al-Qaeda. Because Al-Qaeda looks at this and say, you know, look, they staged this whole thing where they set up this court and executing him. And guess what, Arab America, you're next. Or Arab Iran or Arab Syria or Arab wherever, whoever it is that we want to connect with to serve our cause. It's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm the only American who's disappointed by the conviction of Saddam Hussein.
Why do you love Saddam Hussein so much?
My disappointment is based on my philosophical belief that you shouldn't celebrate death, and my political belief that someone as horrible as Saddam Hussein should be convicted in a legitimate court of legitimate crimes and not under U.S. military occupation, which is ridiculous.
And speaking of execution news, there's an American that was sentenced to be executed. I don't have all the details in my head that well, but the gist of it is there Romania was involved somehow. There was a crime against Romania, I think, that this American, I think he's an American Al-Qaeda, something like that, committed. The judge did not want to give a death penalty order. Military members of the U.S. military came into the court and said, we're here to represent Romania. Romania wants the death penalty for this American that's on trial.
Wow.
And the judge, under pressure, under duress, not really feeling good about it, gave the, I don't know the details, like I say,
gave the order or gave the sentence of death, Romania later says, the American military guys don't represent us. We are not calling for the death penalty. We do not have the death penalty. We don't believe in it. What the hell is going on? And it's still holding. So they're going to execute an American citizen based wow. on American military interfering with a court proceeding. So
again, the celebration of death. You we'll cannot, all feel better when he's dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Romanians, you know, they send vampires after you. That's how Romania works. They don't have the infrastructure.
No,
for
no,
the
no.
Death
they are opposed to death because they want to make them forever eternal living as as vampires.
Exactly. So anyway, further disappointment. And again, I don't think it's me just putting a negative spin on something.
Right. All right, well, I want to play something for you to
yes,
help show you why, no matter what you think about Angelitas, and this actually will reinforce the idea that Schwarzenegger's a macho man and Angelitas is a non-macho man.
Incidentally, if you're listening now live, you still have about 45 minutes to go vote if you haven't voted yet.
Yeah, damn it. So let's see if this will... in fact, work. Stand by, please.
Standing by.
Here's a little video from the past just to get you an idea of what goes through the mind of our current governor.
Arnold Schwarzenegger on Kill Radio.
The greatest feeling you can get in a gym, or the most satisfying feeling you can get in the gym, is the pump. Let's say you train your biceps. Blood is rushing into your muscles, and that's what we call the pump. Your muscles get a really tight feeling, like your skin is going to explode any minute. You know, it's really tight. It's like somebody blowing air into your muscle. It just blows up, and it feels different. It feels fantastic. It's as satisfying to me as coming is, you know, as having sex with a woman and coming. So can you believe how much I am in heaven? I'm like getting the feeling of coming in the gym. I'm getting the feeling of coming at home. I'm getting the feeling of coming backstage when I pump up, when I pose out in front of 5,000 people. I get the same feeling. So I'm coming day and night. I mean, it's terrific, right? So, you know, I'm in heaven.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, governor of the fifth largest economy in the world, coming day and night.
It's fantastic. It's really fantastic the way these things happen for me. And yeah, maybe I have low poll numbers earlier, but much earlier before the election, so I bring it back and it's fantastic.
Do we have any real-time poll, what
I can,
you call it?
For the state of California?
Yeah, I'd like to know how...
I don't know, but I know that I feel fantastic tonight.
Let me look that up for you, or maybe would you like to look that up? There will be some looking up of things. Any good sex news? Or rather bad sex news? What about the thing with the evangelists? The evangelists...
Oh, the Haggard? Was that his name?
Haggerty?
Yeah. The thing where... no, but then Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, who collectively are Satan, came out and said, and I don't mean came out as a euphemism, said basically... this guy, he doesn't really represent the evangelicals. He's part of a small, disorganized collective of people. I've never met him personally. We don't know much about him. It's so funny.
Thou doth protest too much.
Right, but if he comes out and says something like, you know, homosexuality is a sin, then they're the first to jump up on the soapbox and, you know, we love this guy. Not in a gay way, but we love this guy. I want to play a song. This song makes me laugh.
Man, you hear this bullshit they be talking? Every day, man, it's like these motherfuckers is just like professional liars, you know what I'm saying? It's wild. Listen, Bin Laden blow up projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knock down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knock down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden blow up projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knock down.
No allegiance, nigga, fuck the president's speeches. I'm baptized by America and covered in leeches. The dirty water that bleaches your soul and your facial features, drowning you in propaganda that they spit through the speakers. And if you speak about the evil that the government does, the Patriot Act, the track you
to the type in your blood. They try to frame you and say you was trying to sell drugs and throw a federal indictment on niggas to show you love. This shit is run by fake Christians, fake politicians. Look at their mansions and look at the conditions you live in. All they talk about is terrorism on television. They tell you to listen, but they don't really tell you their mission. They funded Al-Qaeda and now they blame the Muslim religion. Even though Bin Laden was a CIA tactician, they gave him billions of dollars and they funded his purpose. Fahrenheit 9/11, that's just scratching the surface.
Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
They say the rebels in Iraq still fight for Saddam, but that's bullshit. I show you why it's totally wrong. Cause if another country invaded the hood tonight, it'd be warfare through Harlem and Washington Heights. I wouldn't be fighting for Bush or white America's dream. I'd be fighting for my people's survival and self-esteem. I wouldn't fight for racist churches from the south, my nigga. I'd be fighting to keep the occupation out, my nigga. You ever clock someone who talks shit or look at you wrong? Imagine if they shot at you and was raping your moms. And of course Saddam Hussein had chemical weapons. We sold them that shit after Ronald Reagan's election. Mercenary contractors fight in a new era, corporate military banking off the war on terror. They controlling the ghetto with the fear of attack, trying to distract the fact that they engineering the crack. So I'm strapped like Lee Malvo holding a sniper rifle. These bullets will touch your kids, and I don't mean like Michael. Your body be sent to the morgue, stripped down and recycled. I fire on house niggas that support you and like you, cause innocent people get murdered in the struggle daily, and poor people never get shit and struggle daily. This ain't no alien conspiracy theory, this shit is real, written on a dollar underneath the Masonic seal.
I don't rap for dead presidents. I'd rather see the president dead. It's never been said, but I set precedents. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga.
Bush knocked down the tower.
Tell the truth, nigga. Bin Laden didn't blow up the projects. It was your nigga. Tell the truth,
City
nigga.
City records was 80 seconds away from the tower. Some cowards fought with the wrong building. They meant to hit ours.
And we're back with the Kill Radio News. You know, speaking of gay, South Carolina, Wisconsin, and Virginia have all approved their gay marriage ban. This is actual reality, actually happening, actual news.
Oh.
This is from the Associated Press. Amendments to ban gay marriage won approval Tuesday, that's today, November 7th, in South Carolina, Wisconsin, and Virginia, known for its rednecks, cheese, and Virginia. As voters in many states considered ballot measures addressing an array of the nation's most divisive social issues, a total of 205 measures were on the ballot in 37 states, ranging from routine bond measures to a riveting contest in South Dakota, where voters chose whether to uphold or reject a toughest-in-the-nation law that would ban virtually all abortions. Nationwide, activists on both sides of the abortion debate were on edge over the campaign. If the ban is upheld, abortion rights supporters are likely to launch a legal challenge that could lead all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, one would hope. Eight states had banned gay marriage amendments on their ballots. Results, I guess, are still pending in Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, South Dakota, and Tennessee. The similar amendments passed previously in all 20 states to consider them. Gay rights activist nursed hopes that the streak might be broken this year in at least one state. Colorado voters had an extra option, a measure that would grant domestic partnership rights to same-sex couples. I think we should allow gay marriage but ban gay interracial marriage, and that way everybody wins.
Oh, that's great. You know, I just think that every time another state bans gay marriage, we're making heterosexual marriage that much safer. Because, I mean, the danger to heterosexual marriage is palpable, tangible, imminent. I mean, every time some gay couple gets married, that means that at any moment a heterosexual man, one man and one woman marriage could spontaneously combust. I mean, I don't want that to happen to my parents.
No, I don't want my parents to spontaneously combust just because one senator and one intern, I'm sorry, Paige.
Yeah. Get it right, buddy.
Legitimized their relationship. And you know what? Actually, it's such a double-edged sword because it's very easy to make fun of this entire issue because the word gay is involved. But frankly, But honestly, I mean, you know, it's not funny. I mean, these are people's lives we're talking about. These are human rights that we're talking about, civil rights, the rights of citizens, people who vote, people who pay taxes, people who contribute plenty to society that deserve equal consideration. And at the same time, and I think what makes it hard not to joke about it is, for me anyway, is sort of like, I don't understand how anybody could have a serious problem with gay marriage. It's the funny part to me, isn't the issue of gay marriage. It's the fact that gay marriage is an issue.
Yeah. I mean, if you're against gay weddings, don't have one.
Well, that's actually an interesting point. If they're saying that they don't want to support gay, you know, official gay long-term relationships, one way to put it, then does that mean that the Republicans are trying to promote gay promiscuity?
Right.
Is that really where they're coming from? Who is that guy? Not Santorum. The other asshole.
Santorum is the one that said, well, it's just, if you allow that, it's going to go to man on dog. That's Santorum. His middle name is Rick Man on Dog Santorum.
Yeah.
Because he says, you know, it's like it's a slippery slope.
Well, he would know.
He's out. Santorum's out? Yeah, he's out.
Woohoo! So who was it? Maybe it was Allen.
George maybe. Allen Makaka?
Yeah.
Mr. George Makaka Allen?
George Makaka Allen. He was on
I made
TV
up
today.
That word. I don't know what it means at all. I made it up.
Yeah. I feel the same way about George. You're an asshole. What was he saying today on TV? He was saying about supporting marriage as one man and one woman. And he was shaking his fist, and he was going on and on about how, you know, he knows how he's going to vote, and he hopes everyone votes with him to maintain the sanctity of the heterosexual marriage. And, you know, it's just such an obvious ploy. No serious person can think that this is a pressing issue that
right.
needs to be examined right now.
Like an anti-flag burning amendment to the Constitution.
There's an actual war actually happening actually right now. There are people being tortured in Guantanamo Bay that have been there for, what is it now, how many years? 4 years?
Yeah.
People have been living under those conditions. It's actually happening right now. So, you know, it makes sense that the Republicans are so anxious to latch on to whatever issue makes people blink just for a second away from the fact that there's a war going on that has no end in sight, that cannot be won because it's based on fantasy. But anyway, this is not good news that three more states
no.
have accepted a gay marriage ban.
We need to learn to start taking away rights from people. I mean, unless you're white and heterosexual, at least publicly heterosexual, that is, then you don't get the right, see? That's how it is.
I think when we come up with propositions, especially propositions that are designed to ban something, we really should step back and think, does this or does this not embarrass America? Clearly, no matter what your philosophical or religious beliefs are, a ban on gay marriage embarrasses America. Anyway.
I think the question you should be asking, John, if I may say, is will the following whatever activity, event, legislation, will it or will it not embarrass the Jesus?
Well,
see,
okay.
if you thought that way.
See, again, I think support gay marriage, but don't support gay intra-religious marriage. Like, if one gay Christian wants to marry another gay Christian, I'm all for it. If he wants to marry a Jew, that's unacceptable.
Oh, boy. Oh.
No? That won't work for you?
No.
All right. I'm just grasping at straws here. And, you know, this thing about man-on-dog action, who even thinks of that stuff?
Rick Santorum.
What a pervert.